Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 38 degrees with light rain falling this morning. It's Wednesday, November 16th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The city of Sitka fired up its diesel generators yesterday to keep up with demand for electricity as the days get shorter and colder. The city uses diesel to supplement its hydropower. But dry weather over the year and increasing demand for electricity have meant more reliance on diesel. When the diesel generator kicks in, so do the costs. In order to recover some of that money, the city imposes a surcharge on utility customers. But as KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, the way that happens is about to change.
Right now, the surcharge kicks in when the city of Sitka uses more than $50,000 worth of diesel fuel to make electricity. The amount of the surcharge is determined by taking the amount of diesel over 50 grand in a year and dividing it by the number of kilowatt hours sold to customers in the same year. The changes approved last night do two main things. Instead of the fuel surcharge kicking in after $50,000, it would kick in after whatever amount the city budgets for diesel. And instead of determining the surcharge based on annual usage, the city would use quarterly data. Here's Utility Director Christopher Bruton explaining to the Assembly last night just how it works.
So we're projecting over the next 6 months, we're going to have to burn $1.5 million worth of diesel. What we have done with this ordinance is we take that number, break it down on a monthly basis,
and then subtract the money already in the budget for fuel and whatever the state has chipped in to help.
Then you come up with a net amount of money that you have to collect to pay for the fuel.
All right. So they've got that net amount, the rest of the bill, basically. And then they look at how much power was used during the same quarter the year before. So they take those two numbers, divide that together,
and that comes up with what the fuel surcharge is per kilowatt hour.
All right, so this is probably the part of the story where you're wondering how much. What are the bills going to look like? Now, remember, the surcharge will be calculated quarterly, so let's look at January and then April. Information presented to the Assembly last night estimates that with a surcharge of about 1 cent per kilowatt hour in January, the average residential bill will go up about $14. In April, with a surcharge of about 2 cents a kilowatt hour, the average residential bill could go up about $26. The increase for residential customers is kind of in the middle of the pack. Commercial customers will see their bills go up about $31 in April, and harbor customers will see their bills go up about $15. There are other variations in there, too, for the Sawmill Cove Industrial Park, where customers could see nearly a $90 jump, and for governmental users, whose bills will go up about $30 in April. And Bruton says the process is used by other utilities, and he compared it to places where the electrical systems are tied together, and utility companies can buy electricity from one another.
You don't have enough of your own generation, you go on the open market and you buy it, and you pass that cost through to the customer, and that's all we're doing here. But we're doing it in a way that we hope we can give the customers the price signal up front so they know what their power is going to cost and they have the ability to modify their behavior and consumption to try to eliminate the impacts of the higher cost energy.
In other words, a little warning rather than being slapped with a surcharge at the end of the year. Now, while all of this is going on, Sitka is working to expand its hydropower capacity. It's well into a project to raise the Blue Lake Dam, and it's exploring the possibility of a hydropower project at Tecats Lake. Assemblymember Mike Reif pointed to projections last night that show Sitka once again having trouble by the year 2025 keeping up with the demand for electricity. He told Bruton that all the money spent on new hydropower needs to be supported with conservation efforts on the parts of all Sitkins.
And the Tecats project is a $300 to $400 million project that is scary, and so conservation definitely has to be part of the solution, but it just goes to show that we have a future that has some major energy obstacles to overcome.
Bruton responded.
That's very astute. We will be in this position again in the next 10 years.
The new fuel surcharge structure earned unanimous approval from the Assembly. It takes effect in 30 days. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Mount Edgecombe Lady Braves powered their way to the state 3A volleyball championship over the weekend. Edgecombe defeated Grace Christian in three straight games at the Menard Sports Center in Wasilla on Saturday to take the title in a mirror image of last year's heartbreaking loss. Rich Calkins coaches the Lady Braves. He says his team carried the memory of last year's defeat with them as they edged toward a rematch of 2010.
Two of the games could have won either way last year, though. We got beat 26-24 and 25-23, and so I think that experience and that close match really paid off this year. And I know going into it, there were a lot of comments about how we didn't want to lose to Grace Christian again.
And like last year, the 2011 championship match could have gone either way. Two of the three games were within 3 points. Calkins says his girls showed extraordinary determination.
Felt like we were in pretty good control of the match, but a couple of balls either way and it could have been a different story. So, but we were real proud because when the tough plays needed to be made, the girls really stepped up and played aggressive and made those plays.
Brenna Johansson, a senior from Hoonah, says she recognized many of the girls on the other side of the court from last year's championship. But a more critical moment may have come in the second round when Mount Edgecombe lost its first game to Dillingham, managing to score only 12 points.
We just weren't focused and we weren't trying our best.
Johansson would go on to rack up 19 kills in the remaining 3 games in the match. Dillingham never got close. Johansson, who is a 2-time All-State player, is one of only 3 seniors the Lady Braves are losing to graduation. The team will rebuild around players like freshman standout Taryn White, who was also named All-State. White says the Lady Braves' surprising first-round loss to Petersburg in last week's regional tournament was a small setback.
Yeah, but it made me push myself a lot harder.
The Edgecombe girls had to claw their way back through the loser's bracket to win their 5th straight regional title before going to state. White also says strong friendships off the court helped the team during their record season. Rich Calkins shares that opinion. The Lady Braves were runners-up in 2010, 2007, and 2005. He says the resolve that this group of girls demonstrated on their way to the state championship in Wasilla was remarkable.
If I could figure out how to teach it, I could write a book and make $1 million or two. But, you know, I think a lot of it's just in the chemistry of the team. And like Taryn said, these girls are all real close. And I think that our strength again this year was our team. You know, when we look back at the state championship match, I could sit here and point out specific times where each and every one of our girls contributed to the victory in a large way. And when the chips were down or Grace Christian was starting to make a run, there was always somebody there to step up and make a great pass or a nice set or, you know, get a kill like these girls did. And I think it was just total teamwork.
The other Lady Braves to make the All-State team were Mariah Martin and Caitlin Cook. It was Cook's 2nd year to receive the honor. The other graduating seniors are Aquilina Active and Danita White. Calkins says the departure of these players will leave a big hole to fill. The cleanup continued at Eliason Harbor yesterday from a weekend storm that packed 60-mile-an-hour winds. Sitka Deputy Harbor Master Chuck Hackett says 2 boats sank in the storm, the 30-foot Dancing Girl and the 24-foot Lisa Nicole. Other problems included a vessel that broke free and beached, one that dragged anchor, and several that experienced damage from collisions with the docks as they pitched and rolled with the unusual chop that moved through the harbor. Hackett says the Harbor Department went through about 300 feet of extra line in an attempt to secure boats, but most impressive, he says, were the scores of people in the harbor who came to each other's aid.
Got people that have boats on the inside are probably sitting in their own stalls comfortable and surely getting rocked around, but nothing like the outside of Eliason Edge where it's kind of a transient area and it seems to take the brunt of it. You know, boats get kind of smashed up against and their buoy balls get snapped and lines get broken, and there must have been 20 or 30 people in Eliason running around helping, assisting our staff, which, you know, we have a small staff. So there was 5 of us plus search and rescue. Don Cluding and Gerald Gangle were assisting us as well as just other people.
Attempts were made to raise the sunken vessels on Tuesday. Hackett says most of the damage was to boats. He says the harbor itself experienced some chafing and a few snapped water lines, but nothing major. To see a picture from the middle of Saturday's storm, visit our website, kcaw.org. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's sending a field representative to visit Western Alaska communities affected by the previous week's massive storm. Murkowski says she got regular updates from state and federal authorities as the storm was threatening, But she says now that the storm has passed, she wants a first-hand account of where Western Alaska stands. Her office says staffer Bob Walsh will visit communities this week to survey conditions and hear from residents. He will then brief Murkowski. Walsh is set to visit Unalakleet and Shaktulik today, Nome and Kotzebue tomorrow, and Kivalina on Friday. The Alaska Wilderness League says it has delivered a symbolic postcard to the Interior Department representing signatures of over 862,000 people who want a wilderness designation for the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed six management alternatives for ANWR. Two alternatives recommend wilderness status for the coastal plain. Yesterday was the last day for public comment. Wilderness opponents say the plain holds petroleum resources and should be open to drilling that could generate jobs and generate revenue for Alaska. Alaska Wilderness League Director Cindy Shogun says in a prepared statement that the coastal plain is critical birthing ground for polar bears, the porcupine caribou herd, and birds. A newly formed group has concerns over the state's film incentive program. The Alaska Film Alliance is a group comprised of local filmmakers in Anchorage and those from the support industry. Members have planned a noon news conference today in Anchorage to discuss their concerns ahead of the legislative session when lawmakers will consider renewing the program. And state flags will be lowered tomorrow to honor a former lawmaker. Governor Sean Parnell's office says former state representative Philip Guy died Sunday at the age of 70. Guy represented Kwikluk in the State House from 1972 until 1980. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for rain, highs around 40, east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.